Think about the practice of structural engineering for a moment.
Okay.
When architects design a skyscraper, they calculate tolerances based on normal, everyday conditions. But the true structural integrity of that building is completely invisible on a calm afternoon.
Right. It takes a severe windstorm to actually expose the hidden microfractures.
Exactly. It takes a storm to reveal compromised load-bearing walls and, you know, to show the precise difference between a foundation anchored in bedrock and one that was simply poured over sand.
And I think it is safe to say that same windstorm is currently testing the structural integrity of the global financial system.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
So we are grounding this deep dive in the financial reality of May 2026. For you listening, the 30-year United States Treasury yield has reached 5.19%.
Which is a threshold we have not seen since July 2007.
Right, the eve of a generation-defining financial crisis. And the macroeconomic drivers for this yield are fairly evident. We are looking at inflation reignited by oil prices and the Iran conflict, mounting sovereign debt, and a Federal Reserve trying to balance economic growth with price stability.
But our mission today requires looking well past that daily market commentary.
Yes, it does. We are examining an article from the Averaging Up collection to explore how this 5.19% yield functions as a revealer. It essentially acts as a mechanism that strips away superficial metrics to expose the underlying nature of corporate growth.
It is a fascinating framework.
It is. But before we get into the analysis, we must explicitly establish the foundational definitions the author uses so we're all on the same page.
That is crucial, yes.
So the article breaks every business down into two fundamental components. Well, first, there is the A.
The toll.
Right, the A is the toll. It represents the cash the business collects today from its existing day-to-day operations. And then there's the B.
Which is the wave.
Exactly. The B represents the structural growth that arrives over time. So essentially, the A is the toll bridge you already built, and the B is your plan to capture more traffic in the future.
Precisely. And the nature of that future growth leads directly to the core categorization of the article.
Walk us through that.
Well, when a business possesses a B that is free, meaning it can capture future growth without requiring massive capital expenditure, the author defines it as a free surfer.
A free surfer, okay.
Yes. Conversely, when the B is expensive and requires heavy, continuous investment just to generate that growth, the business is defined as a mechanical compounder.
So we have the free surfer with a free B and the mechanical compounder with an expensive B. Let us apply these definitions directly to what we are seeing in the market right now.
I think we have to.
Warren Buffett has that famous observation about how you only find out who has been swimming naked when the tide goes out. The central thesis of the article is that a 5.19% yield is the tide rapidly receding.
Yes, and the receding water is revealing a hidden gradient between these different types of businesses.
A gradient that was completely obscured for the past 15 years.
To understand that revelation, we first have to understand the obfuscation.
Right, the era of free money.
Exactly. From roughly 2009 through 2020, we existed in an era defined by zero interest rate policy. Capital was, for all intents and purposes, free.
And this had a very specific consequence.
It did. It compressed the visible gradient between the free surfer and the mechanical compounder. The article highlights two distinct corporate models to illustrate this compression.
Let us hear them.
On one end of the spectrum, we have Visa. Visa is the quintessential free surfer. Its structural growth, its B, costs almost nothing.
Because when global electronic transaction volumes increase, Visa captures that growth without needing to build new physical infrastructure.
Right. Now, on the other end, we have Microsoft, specifically its Azure division. Azure is a mechanical compounder. To capture growth in cloud computing and artificial intelligence, Microsoft must currently commit to $190 billion in annual capital expenditure.
They're building massive data centers, buying advanced semiconductors, hiring specialized engineers.
Yes, a profoundly expensive B.
Let me offer an analogy to clarify how those two very different realities looked identical for over a decade. Imagine two logistics companies expanding their delivery operations.
Okay.
Company one possesses a theoretical self-replicating delivery truck. Whenever a new delivery route is added, a new truck simply materializes at zero cost. That is the free surfer.
That is Visa.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, company two must purchase $190 billion worth of physical trucks to serve those same new routes. However, the bank is offering 0% non-amortizing financing.
So the money is free.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you only look at the immediate profit and loss statement under those specific financing conditions, Both fleets appear to be expanding without friction.
They look identical on paper.
So did this dynamic effectively make every corporate management team look like capital allocation geniuses simply because the fundamental cost of their growth was entirely invisible?
It systematically hid the penalty for poor capital allocation. At a 0% cost of capital, the profound economic difference between Visa and Microsoft Azure nearly disappears on a spreadsheet.
Because there is no interest burden.
Right. If you are spending $190 billion on growth but financing that expenditure at 0%, you carry practically no interest expense. The capital expenditure is a real cash outflow, but the overarching cost of capital remains invisible in the valuation models.
So the discount rate approaches zero and the illusion holds.
Yes. The fundamental difference between natural growth occurring safely inside a protective economic moat and expensive growth occurring outside of a moat on a level playing field is entirely submerged.
Which brings us to the present. The illusion has ended. We are now dealing with the arithmetic of a 5.19% yield.
The decompression.
Right. What actually happens when that invisible cost of capital suddenly becomes a very visible line item on the balance sheet?
The mathematics are entirely unforgiving. Let us look at Microsoft again. That $190 billion of annual capital expenditure financed at 0% carried no interest cost. But when the cost of capital shifts to 5%, that identical $190 billion generates approximately $9.5 billion in annual interest expense.
That is a massive figure.
It is $9.5 billion subtracted directly from free cash flow. It is capital that is no longer available for share repurchases or dividend distributions or operational buffers.
And crucially, this capital is funding growth in artificial intelligence and cloud infrastructure. The article describes these sectors as a level playing field, right?
Yes. It is essentially an arms race with Amazon and Google. No single entity possesses an entrenched, unassailable moat.
So Microsoft is paying $9.5 billion annually just to finance growth in a sector that offers no structural protection. Meanwhile, Visa continues to face a fundamentally different reality.
Their cost of growth remains mathematically at zero.
They do not borrow to fund their transaction volume growth. They do not issue new equity.
No, the yield curve is effectively irrelevant to their operating economics. The spread between $9.5 billion in financing costs and zero financing costs did not exist 3 years ago.
Because it was hidden by macroeconomic policy.
Exactly. Now it is visible, and it widens with every single basis point increase in the yield. This is the mechanical decompression of the gradient.
But the article identifies a deeper force at work here. Something beyond just the raw arithmetic of interest expense.
Mm-hmm.
You describe the AI and cloud space as a level playing field without a moat.
Yes.
The author connects us directly to a fundamental principle of microeconomics regarding margin convergence.
Mm-hmm.
Walk us through how that mechanism operates.
Well, basic microeconomics dictates that in a perfectly competitive market or a level playing field with no barriers to entry, profit margins inevitably converge towards zero.
The gravitational constant of capitalism.
Right. The mechanism is straightforward. When incumbents in an industry earn excess returns, new entrants are naturally attracted to that market.
And to win market share, they compete on price.
Exactly. This increases the overall supply of the service, prices drop, and margins compress. Eventually, the economic profit disappears entirely.
And the era of zero rates essentially suspended that gravitational force.
It did. When capital is free, a business operating with thin 5% operating margins on a level playing field can survive indefinitely.
They borrow at zero, invest in aggressive growth, and report top-line revenue increases.
And the market misinterprets this revenue growth as genuine compounding. The business survives not because it possesses a durable franchise, but simply because the oxygen of free money keeps it alive.
But at a 5% yield, gravity reasserts itself.
Yes. If you have 5% operating margins and you are financing your growth at 5%, your economic profit is zero. The cost of capital consumes the entirety of the margin.
Wait, if the gravitational constant of capitalism forces margins to zero across the board, how is Visa sitting on a 60% operating margin right now? Why aren't they getting crushed by these exact same macroeconomic forces?
Because Visa does not operate on a level playing field.
Ah, I see.
The gravitational pull of margin convergence only applies where competition can freely enter. Visa is protected by a profound infrastructural moat.
Replicating their global network of merchants and issuing banks is virtually impossible.
Right. For a new entrant, it is a non-starter. Rising interest rates cannot compress their margins because their growth, their B, requires zero financing.
So the fundamental lesson of the 5.19% yield is not just that borrowing money is more expensive.
No, it is the revelation that unprotected margins are incredibly fragile.
We have established that the tide has receded, exposing both the true cost of growth and the fragility of unprotected margins. The article then categorizes the market into three distinct types of naked swimmers based on this new reality.
Yes, building directly on Buffett's metaphor.
Let us review these categories, starting with the mechanical bee outside the moat.
Microsoft Azure serves as the prime example for this first category. This type of business is doubly naked in the current environment.
Doubly naked.
Yes. First, the stock price declines because higher yields mathematically shrink the present value of future cash flows in any standard valuation model.
And the second reason?
The second and far more dangerous reason is that the actual business fundamentals deteriorate. The cost of financing their $190 billion growth mandate rises substantially, while their profit margins remain entirely unprotected against well-funded competitors.
So the financial model and the economic reality weaken simultaneously.
Exactly.
We should unpack that first point for the listener before moving forward. The article mentions duration math shrinking the present value of future cash flows. Provide a clear explanation of why higher yields automatically drive down the stock price in these models.
It comes down to the time value of money. If a company promises to deliver $100 in free cash flow 10 years from now, an investor has to decide what that future $100 is worth today.
Right.
When interest rates are at zero, you cannot earn a return on your cash in the bank, so that future $100 is highly valuable to you today. You might pay $95 for it.
Because there is no alternative yield.
Precisely. But when the risk-free treasury yield is at 5%, the calculus changes entirely. You could simply put $60 in the bank today, earn a guaranteed 5%, and have $100 in 10 years.
Therefore, you will not pay more than $60 today for the company's future cash flow.
Exactly. As the yield rises, the present value of all future earnings plummets.
So the mechanical bee outside the moat takes a hit on the valuation model and a real-world hit on the billions in interest expense. What is the second category of swimmer?
The second category is the mechanical bee inside the moat. The article points to companies like GE Aerospace and the major North American railroads, such as Canadian Pacific.
How are they different?
Well, they are fundamentally different because they are partially exposed, but not structurally threatened. Their stock prices will still drop due to the exact same duration math we just discussed.
Because higher interest rates compress the present value of their future earnings.
Right. However, their actual business economics are shielded by a formidable moat.
Because a transcontinental railroad faces zero threat of a new entrant building a parallel network of tracks across the Canadian Rockies.
Exactly. And GE Aerospace enjoys captive, highly profitable maintenance margins for 30 years on every jet engine they install.
The article refers to this scenario as a compression harvest, right?
Yes, a compression harvest waiting to happen. The market price falls strictly due to macroeconomic factors, but the underlying fundamentals remain robust. Investors simply have to wait for time to resolve the pricing gap.
That brings us to the third category, the free surfer. We discussed Visa's economic insulation earlier, but there is an intellectual contradiction in how the broader market treats this specific category.
There is a significant mispricing, yes.
To the casual observer, the free surfer appears exposed because its stock price drops alongside the rest of the market. The algorithmic models categorize Visa as a long-duration growth stock.
So when rates rise, the discounted cash flow models automatically apply that duration math and compress its valuation.
Which is the standard operating procedure for institutional trading.
The models unilaterally penalize long-dated cash flows when the discount rate increases, regardless of the underlying business structure.
Which reveals a significant flaw in standard valuation modeling. I mean, the market is fundamentally mispricing the free surfer.
Entirely.
If Visa's business economics, its 60% margins, and its zero-cost growth are independent of the macroeconomic water level, then driving the stock price down merely because the treasury yield increased is an irrational reflex.
It applies a mechanical interest rate-driven penalty to a non-mechanical reality.
The model fails to distinguish between a drop in value caused by deteriorating fundamentals and a drop in price caused by arbitrary discount rate adjustments.
And meanwhile, the free surfer continues compounding its internal value at the exact same rate regardless of the yield curve. The gap between its market price and its intrinsic value widens significantly during these periods of rising rates.
This transitions us perfectly from theoretical categorization to real-world application. The article analyzes the portfolio moves of elite investor Chris Hahn in the first quarter of 2026.
Yes, his regulatory filings demonstrate a precise navigation of this newly visible gradient.
Let us look at the portfolio moves. During the first quarter, he reduced his position in Microsoft by a staggering 84%.
Right.
Simultaneously, he increased his stakes in Visa, S&P Global, and Moody's. And he maintained his existing positions in GE Aerospace and the major railroads.
Han's actions map directly to the framework we are discussing.
Let us analyze those specific moves. S&P Global and Moody's share the exact same characteristics as Visa.
They are natural B businesses residing inside formidable moats. Their structural growth costs nothing, and their margins are protected by deep infrastructural and regulatory advantages.
Because credit ratings are a regulatory prerequisite for issuing debt.
Exactly. You cannot simply launch a competitor to Moody's and expect the global bond market to accept your ratings.
So Han identified that the rising tide of interest rates is completely irrelevant to the underlying economics of these franchises.
He bought the free surfers while the market was mispricing them based on flawed duration math.
And his decision regarding Microsoft is equally illustrative of the framework.
He aggressively sold the mechanical bee outside the moat. He recognized that Microsoft's $190 billion capital expenditure, now burdened by a 5% financing cost on a highly competitive playing field, would inevitably lead to value destruction.
And he also held steady on the mechanical bee businesses inside the moat, like GE and the railroads.
Because he understood that their temporary price compression did not alter their long-term captive economics, he is positioning himself for the compression harvest.
There is one final critical position in Han's Q1 2026 portfolio that introduces a crucial nuance to our understanding. He opened a massive new position in Alphabet.
Yes, that is a vital point.
The article categorizes Alphabet not as a pure free surfer, but as an imperfect B. Explain what makes this structure so unique.
The imperfect B is a structural hybrid. The author defines Alphabet as being roughly 75% natural and 25% mechanical.
So they do possess a mechanical portion of their business that requires expensive infrastructure.
Yes. Specifically, their cloud and AI divisions, which are competing directly with Microsoft Azure. However, that mechanical growth is entirely self-financed by their A, their core search business.
The margins on Google search are virtually untouchable.
It functions as an infrastructural monopoly that generates massive amounts of free cash flow.
So because the highly profitable, natural portion of the business effectively subsidizes the mechanical portion without requiring external debt financing, Alphabet is shielded from the 5% yield in a way that Microsoft is not.
Exactly. The broader market still compresses Alphabet's stock price due to the general tech sector sell-off. But Han recognized that the natural B dominates the company's fundamental economics.
He acquired a uniquely protected asset that self-funds its own infrastructure.
By buying it at a comprehensively discounted price, he demonstrated a perfect calibration to the macroeconomic tide.
We have covered substantial ground today, so let us synthesize the framework for the listener. The era of cheap money functioned as the ultimate equalizer.
It did.
When capital was free, it masked the exorbitant cost of growth for mechanical compounders, and it artificially sustained unprotected margins by suspending the microeconomic laws of competition.
And the 5.19% yield we are witnessing in May 2026 is the great differentiator.
The gradient between a true free surfer and a vulnerable mechanical compounder was always present. It is simply standing in plain sight now that the water has receded.
The foundational architecture of these businesses did not change overnight. The moat, the cost of the structural wave, the integrity of the margins, those elements were permanently embedded in the corporate DNA.
The only variable that shifted was the illumination provided by the cost of capital. Now, if you want to explore these specific frameworks further, including deeper dives into the infinite investor, the permanent wave, and further analysis on the imperfect B, you can find the Averaging Up collection at averagingup.com.
I think there's one final vital implication to this entire framework that requires careful consideration.
What is that?
We noted earlier that the market's standard discounted cash flow models systematically penalize free surfers during periods of rising interest rates, despite their cost of growth remaining firmly at zero.
Right, the mechanical penalty.
This suggests a profound structural inefficiency in the market's pricing mechanism. It implies that periods of rising yields do not merely serve to reveal failing mechanical businesses and fragile margins.
They do something else.
They mathematically guarantee that the world's most pristine, unassailable assets will periodically go on sale for entirely irrational reasons. If the macroeconomic windstorm is inevitably going to expose the structural flaws in the vulnerable buildings around us, the true opportunity presents presented by a 5% yield is not just avoiding the collapse.
It is about where you deploy your capital.
Yes. The generational opportunity is acquiring the most perfectly engineered structures, while the rest of the market is panicked by the wind. You do not just avoid the naked swimmers. You buy the suits at a profound discount.